Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Thursday, Cofield and Company. Quiet in studio. Mute the computers. Griffin's here. Willie's here. We're going to have a top 25 college basketball coach in about 15 minutes. Talk some coaches versus cancer. Is another great golf event, the 18th. Golf event hosted by Lon Kruger is going to be this weekend into early next week. What's up, Willie?
What's up, sir? How are you?
I don't know about stunned. I'm not the biggest VGK guy, but, you know, I feel for the fans. That was a pretty abrupt ending. And, man, oh, man, ESPN did a really good job of, once the goal went in overtime, of just focusing on the Knights.
Yeah.
They looked friggin' stunned.
Well, I think the best shot was the one from up top, like looking straight down. Right as the puck went to the back, and it's just a bunch of Golden Knights just sprawled, and it just tells the story.
Aiden Hill looked devastated. Players on the bench were wrecked.
Let's put it this way, Steve: they get one past Skinner, and they're not coming back from Edmonton with a forcing seven.
You don't think it would happen?
No, and we saw it, right? I mean, we saw it last week when they went down 0-2. I think it was pretty evident that I was dead wrong about Edmonton from the first series. I told everybody out of the first eight series, I missed two. I had Tampa Bay beating Florida, and I had the Kings beating Edmonton. And I kept saying, I don't think that Edmonton has much horsepower past Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Well, insert foot here, the Edmonton Oilers were deep, and the Golden Knights weren't, and yet I kept saying, the Golden Knights' depth. So it was stunning because of the expectations for me personally, my predictions, and I thought Vegas was going to win the Western Conference. The only team that it turns out that I've been dead set right about thus far is that Winnipeg is not all that. I thought that they would be ousted by the Blues, and let's face it, the way that they won, scoring two goals in the final moments and win in the last second against Jordan Binnington in that final game, that was brutal when the Blues were up. They shouldn't have even been there. So Dallas, I think, is going to knock them out, especially they'll be fired up after watching Edmonton. They're not going to want to keep going. But I was dead wrong more about the Knights than I was about the Oilers. But the bottom line is I was wrong about both teams because
you didn't think the Oilers had the depth. You thought that's where the advantage would be, and it turned out they had the better depth in this series.
Yeah. And against the Kings. So let's, you know, hell hath the hockey team scorned because
I should have made a bet. I missed.
Because the Edmonton Oilers are last year's Florida Panthers. Last year's Florida Panthers were angry about losing to the Golden Knights. The thing is, Dallas is probably the most talented team when they're fully healthy, and they were shorthanded to start this current series with Winnipeg, and they're getting healthier, they're getting stronger, they're getting better, and we're going to get a rematch. So while Edmonton wants revenge for the Stanley Cup, Dallas lost in last year's Western Conference Final in six games to Edmonton. Pete DeBoer and company want revenge also.
Knights are done. They lose to Edmonton 4-1 in the series. Lose last night in overtime 1-0. Just couldn't scratch out enough goals in the series. As I sat there for the 5 minutes and watched them look all sad and devastated, I also thought to myself, hey, it's one of those rare deals where it just didn't work out. There is no reason to tear it down. Massive retool. Just a couple of additions, some tweaks here and there. Is that right?
They're aging. Out of their best crop that signed, locked, and loaded for a couple of years, only one is younger than 30. And they're going to lose some people, right? It depends on what Kelly McCrimmon's going to do. I think there are five possibly unrestricted free agents coming up. And whether or not they re-sign them, whether they move on, the guys that they have on long-term are aging. Jack Eichel's probably their best shot. I mean, you know, he's their star. He's not 30, and let's face it, he's emerged as one of the top five forwards in the league. He was in my vote for the top five as far as the Hart Trophy is concerned. But they're going to have to go out and possibly get a younger big gun to be right there. Mark Stone is great. William Karlsson, great. But they're going to need somebody else because guess what? In another year, Jack Eichel's contract's up, and so he may be looking for an extension ahead of time. What I am wondering is how they're feeling about that $6 million man in between the pipes. Because as far as I'm concerned, and we talked about this last week, I said it last week, hey, great guy, and he works his ass off, and he takes care of his body, and I've heard he's told me his regimen. Practices at 11 o'clock. That dude's in the facility at 7 o'clock starting on treatment and whirlpool and stretching and cupping and whatever it is. But Aiden Hill was not left out to dry in a lot of these games. He is just as much to be at fault than the offense not producing.
I mean, scoreless game, he allows one goal, but the goal.
Yeah, but Steve.
No, what I'm saying is that on that goal, that's not an impossible save. He flubbed it with the glove and set it up.
Okay, but I'm past last night's game. What I'm talking about is the entire playoffs. I'm going back to Minnesota series. I'm talking about the Edmonton series. I think I broke down the stats for you yesterday or last week. Among netminders with five appearances in the postseason, Aiden Hill was one of the three worst goaltenders in save percentage. You're supposed to be the Pacific Division champs and one of the favorites to win the Western Conference to get to the Stanley Cup Final. That's not what you want from your – that's not all on the guy skating in front of you and they're not bailing him out. At some point, he's got to do some bailing out as well. So I'm not talking about just last – yeah, he played great last night. But let's face it, his guys score and they go back to Edmonton. I just don't think that he's putting together another big outing in Edmonton. I think it was going to be tough.
As you know, I listen mostly to Fox Sports Radio during the afternoon. I'm usually driving in to do the show, and I like the afternoon shows, right? I think Gottlieb is solid. I think he's dropped off a lot, and he's lost his attention span with the coaching gig. But Covino and Rich cracked me up, and they were actually very split on the NFL schedule release videos. Has this become a monster that's kind of lame? One of them said, don't like it. The other said, really like it. I've watched three. I watched the Seahawks because CBS Sports said it was the number one. I watched the Raiders. I watched the Chargers. The Raiders was pretty solid. I would give it a B. But I was also grading against the Minecraft with the Chargers. What do you think of the Raiders release video?
I glanced through it. I watched the Chargers, and I haven't watched anything else because, quite frankly, I've been busy packing up a house and moving into another.
No excuse. These are the important things in life, are these videos.
Yeah, it's really not.
Well.
Because guess what? None of those NFL teams are paying my rent. So, for the last 48 hours, I've been entrenched in moving boxes. But I really did like I'm looking forward to sitting down at some point and relaxing and just taking a deep breath from boxes and watching every single video just back to back to back to back to back to back to back.
Wow, that's a lot of videos. Did you watch?
Yeah, I did. And actually, one of my buddies who I played football with back at Palo Verde High School, he's in the Raiders release video.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, he's the guy in the background, JPP, Jackson Powers Johnson, when he's sitting there at the desk. There's a guy right behind him, kind of looking at him like disappointed, like weirdly at him. That's my boy.
Nice. JPJ was probably one of the funniest parts. He's taking a call as, someone with the Raiders, talking to ticket holders or something, and he tries to say, well, he does it on purpose. He says Raiders, like go Raiders, right? But he doesn't say it like that. He says it like the weirdo guy, the Jacksonville coach, Liam Cohen, and like puts the accentuation on the wrong part of it, like Raiders. And everyone's like, what are you doing? So that was a little chuckle. There are only two media members featured in a 6-plus-minute video. Any guesses? Local Vegas Raiders media.
In the Raiders video.
In the Raiders schedule release video. Only two.
Only two media members.
Only two local. Are you with us? Come on. Yes, only two.
I'm repeating just for emphasis. Relax. Well, I'm going to say Vinny.
Vincenzo, over on Raider Nation Radio 920, made it. It's a big statement. So he's the number one media guy.
JT the Brick.
No JTTB.
Really?
No Q Myers. Amber Theo Harris is on it with Eric Allen sitting in, I think, what's their studio.
No Paul G. Interesting.
No Adam Hill. Adam Hill lives there. No the Carpenter guy, the SI guy. He lives there. Yeah. He's not in it.
He shouldn't be. I would have thought that maybe I would have thought they would consider Paul, considering, I mean, media, but also now columnist for the Raiders.
Maybe they made it before Paul was on board. He'll go in banging
okay,
the table.
But nevertheless, he's a senior member of the media that's covered them. Vic Taffer's now not on the beat.
They could have done an
Tashaun,
edit, is
they
what
could
you're
have.
Saying.
Levi Edwards, I would imagine, is in it.
Post-film edit.
Yes.
Let's get Paul in here.
Yeah.
Just put Paul's face over Amber's.
Well, they could because here's the thing. You have the video. It's sort of like the intro to a TV show or something like that. You know, when a new character, they splice stuff in. So
yeah. So with the Raiders scheduled release video, they announced the Chargers by touting that the Chargers don't have a Super Bowl victory. And I saw Raiders fans doing this. I saw one of them. I forget where I commented. I was like, facepalm. I'm like, the Super Bowl win is 41 years old. I mean, come on. Chargers have none. That is a fact. And you know what? My Jets have none. That is a fact. I think my favorite part was introing the Bears, eventually taking a deep dish pizza and throwing in the garbage.
Okay.
Penn and Teller were in a room finding mystery flags, like hidden flags, to announce the Chiefs games. Not bad. They oddly put together the use of an index card and the sticks for the Cowboys announcement, because that was that jackass Gene Steratore and his index card.
Mm-hmm.
They had a cart that couldn't clear some tape that was on the ground. So they had a lineman, someone under center, and running back, tush-push for the Eagles game.
For the Eagles.
Okay. Not bad. Max Crosby makes an appearance.
As he should.
I didn't really get this one. He just kicked like a little inflatable Texan. So I guess that's proof his legs are working. And those were kind of the highlights. I saw Raider Nation up on YouTube raving about the video. I thought it was solid. I will say on the other side of it, the Chargers did Minecraft. There a lot of teams are doing video games. I am out of the demo. I don't know what's going on. And this is not an insult to Raiders fans. The Chargers video and Seattle's video as well, because Seattle's video I think was based on BattleBots. And I was old for BattleBots. There's so much nuance, and it goes so quick, and there's so many hidden references that you probably have to look it up afterwards. Like, I don't really want to have to look it up. So I'm going to say this. I think the Chargers video is too smart. The video is just dumb enough. And maybe that's the fan bases, but probably not. I'm not saying Raiders fans are dumb. I'm dumb. So I could get with the Raiders video because I got it. Now you sound like you're dedicated. You're going to spend like 2 hours watching these videos and then taking notes and looking everything up.
I won't take notes, but I just
because there's a lot of jokes
just
in there.
To be entertaining. Yeah, the some of the side jokes with the Chargers videos. The one with
dude, I don't know what's going on.
With Josh Allen coming out of watching Sinners and Sauce Gardner's waiting for him.
No idea.
Sauce Gardner apparently said that he would not go see Sinners because Josh Allen's girlfriend is in it. It must be something. So he's walking.
That's deep.
So he's walking out of a theater from watching Sinners. Sauce Gardner's waiting, and then they walk off together.
There was a bunch of them in the Chargers. I'm like, I don't know what is going on.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Steve and Willie, let's talk some Coaches versus Cancer. A great cause, been going on for years and years, has raised millions of dollars, specifically locally. They've got their yearly golf tournament and event. That goes down coming up this weekend, May 18th to the 20th. Cancer.org is where you can contribute. It's the 18th edition of the Las Vegas Golf Classic. And Dana Altman, Oregon coach, is generally part of this, good friends with the Krugers, and he joins Cofield and Company here on this Thursday afternoon. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
When do you get to Vegas?
I get in Sunday. We got a couple groups from Oregon coming in. Been with Coach Kruger. I worked for Coach Kruger a long time ago at Kansas State, and been a pleasure to be in the tournament every year.
It's a big event. I know it's a special event. Tell me how, aside from being friends with the Kruger family, why you were really drawn to this thing in terms of what it's raising money for.
Well, everyone has been touched by someone they know, family member, friends that have been touched by cancer. And, you know, the Coaches Versus Cancer started a long time ago with Norm Stewart. It's become the NABC, the National Association of Basketball Coaches. It's our national charity. And, you know, because it does good, because you can raise awareness, hopefully some funds to help research. It's just a great cause.
Do you guys do any local events in Oregon and Eugene specifically?
No, I for Coaches Versus Cancer, I do not. My charity here is the Children's Hospital.
Okay.
And so I don't do anything locally for Coaches Versus Cancer.
You are a big golfer, like big enough? Are you bringing your clubs, or how do you work this?
Well, I'm going to bring my clubs, but no, I'm not that good a player. Coach Kruger's a lot better than I am, but no, I love to play.
I know. I like that you said, I'm going to bring my clubs. Like, I'm not a good golfer. It wouldn't matter for me. I could use any old sticks, and it would be the same result. So I'm completely awful and undisciplined and really just want to take a couple of pops while I'm doing it. Dana Altman, Oregon coach, is with us. So this event's raised $16 million over the years, Coaches Versus Cancer golf event. And again, you can contribute at cancer.org. There are still spots, I think, for some players, so look into it. I wanted to ask you about the Kruger relationship, and I know you work for Lon, but just to talk about their specialness as a family, because we just had the Kevin Kruger experience here, and we're sad to see Kevin go as a UNLV coach, but there's something about him when you talk to them, and especially in Lon's case, just how giving he is. And I can't tell you how many stories I've had where someone brings up a case where they were having a rough time in some aspect of life. It might even be just winning and losing. And like out of the blue, Lon Kruger calls him up to talk to him.
Well, Coach is genuine. He is, you know, a great guy. Been a great mentor for me, you know, for a long time. I went to work for him in 1986, almost 40 years ago. And, you know, he's been a big influence on my life ever since. But he is a giving guy, cares about people, really cared about his players when he was coaching. I was with him for 3 years at Kansas State and learned so much from him. It was my first time in Division I. I'd been a junior college coach, and just being around him, watching him, I learned so much. And as I mentioned, for almost 40 years now, there's not a major decision I make or even some small ones that I make without calling him first.
So, Dana, let me ask you, someone like Lon Kruger, right, and he steps away from coaching. He sort of was in the shadows, I'm sure, there to consult for Kevin. But how have you seen in your career, in your walks of life as a coach, a person like that still have an impact, not even having to be on the sidelines in the coach's box? How have you seen a guy like that still have an impact on college basketball?
Well, there's no doubt that anybody that's worked for Coach, he's had a great influence. I know Chris Crutchfield at University of Nebraska at Omaha was in the tournament last year, and I know he and Coach very close. But guys who just watched Coach on the sidelines for all those years. I mean, you guys watched UNLV, you watched Oklahoma. He had a presence about him, but yet he respected the game. Didn't get many technicals. He's not a cursor. He's not, you know, over there raising a bunch of cane over there on the sideline all the time. He handles himself really well, so I think he's influenced a lot of coaches. I think the way he's handled himself, both on and off the floor, has been a role model for a lot of guys. And again, he won a lot of games, but he treated his players really good. I think the biggest compliment you can give any coach is, would you send your son to play for him? And I'm not sure there's not a coach out there that wouldn't send their son to play for Coach Kruger.
18th annual Coaches vs. Cantrell Las Vegas Golf Classic coming up. Oregon coach Dan Altman is on with us. If you want more information, lasvegas.acsgolf.org. Okay, well, Lon has talked about the fact that, you know, this era, this NIL era, until they set up some new rules, he's kind of looked at it like, you know, I don't know if I want to do this at this age anymore. Where are you? How have you adjusted to make NIL era work?
Well, it's different. Coach and I have talked about it a lot. There's no doubt that, you know, college basketball has really changed in the last 3 or 4 years with NIL, with the portal, guys jumping around quite a bit. It's really changed how you construct a team and put a team together year to year. You got so many new guys coming in that it really changes things. But, you know, it's been great for the players. They've been able to make some money. And I think the NCAA and the administrators probably were way, way slow in making this adjustment. You can't brag about having a $1 billion TV contract for the NCAA tournament and not be able to give the kids some of that. You can't have the stadiums full in football and have guys out there playing football and not give them part of it. So I think we were really slow in making the adjustment to giving the players their due and giving them some money. And now the pendulum's kind of swung, you know, way to the other side. And so, you know, I don't know if the new rules that are coming up, if the judge approves the distribution plan, if that'll change things. But it's a new day, and the rules keep changing. Right now, I'm not sure we do have any rules, but the rules keep changing, and it's going to change here if the judge decides that the revenue distribution is the way we need to go.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned your JUCO background. I mean, it's a while ago, but does that help? I mean, it does feel at times, you know, you have a whole new team, although in the case of UNLV, they have basically a whole new team. Does it feel like you're back doing JUCO again in terms of roster construction?
A little bit. Yeah. You know, it's changing a lot more, you know, because guys leave that normally wouldn't have left because they'd had the red shirt. And so, yeah, it's the change, the number of guys coming in and going out, much, much closer to junior college than it was to the 4 year situations that I had. You know, I was at Creighton for 16 years and we had a lot of guys for 5 years there. We redshirted a lot of guys. So, drastically different from what we had just a few years ago.
Dan Altman's with us. He's part of Coaches versus Cantor, big golf event coming up 18th through the 20th, cantor.org, to get more information. And I mentioned the site for the golf tournament itself. You can go up on the web to lasvegas.acs.golf.org. Let's close on this one. I just wanted to lean on you, if you're cool with this, on the NBA draft. And, you know, you guys were in the Big Ten this year, so you got to play. There was a lot of talent in the Pac-12, but there was, you know, a lot of talent this year in the Big Ten. Thinking back to the players you faced on the schedule and even non-con, who was the guy you looked at and you're like, that guy could be a pretty good pro? Was it one of the Rutgers kid, the dude with – Illinois, I'm blanking on another guy. John Tonji was awesome. I don't know what they think of him in the NBA, but I think he's a professional player.
No, I agree with you. I like Tonji a lot. Bailey and Harper from Rutgers, you know, they didn't hurt us too bad, but you could see the talent and getting ready for that game. Those two guys, you know, I know all the mock drafts have them in the top 2 to 5 spots. So I don't think there's any doubt they'll go pretty high. The guard from Illinois lit it up against us. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name, but
I was leaving it to you. That's why I didn't say it. Yeah, I was like, coach will know it.
Yeah. And Will Riley was the other guy on that team. They had two freshmen that will probably go in the first round, and they're both really, really talented. So, you know, those young guys are going to go, and in the non-conference, we had some, you know, games against Alabama and Texas A&M, and they've got players that are projected to go high. So, no, I think it's – we didn't play Duke, so Cooper Flagg, we didn't see him. We lost Arizona in the round of 32 to go play Duke in the Sweet 16. So, I went 12 for 22 from the dang free throw line, which – we've been shooting free throws great all year and didn't shoot them well that night. But Cooper Flagg's going to be number one. He's one of those generational talents that I think will play in the NBA for a long, long time. But we had some great players in the Big Ten. And Harper and Bailey, you know, are the two that are going to go really high and will have long, long NBA careers.
So, Dana, you've been there since 2010, and I remember at Creighton. But since you've been at Oregon – You've coached some very, very talented young men, but would you say that the most talented basketball player you've seen since you've been there is one Sabrina Ionescu?
She is talented, and she's done a lot of great things for women's basketball, for the WNBA. They just had an exhibition game here a couple nights ago. I guess it was Monday night, and so she was back in town. But, no, it's great. You know, Peyton's having a great year with the Celtics, sixth man of the year, so it was great to see those two came out in the same year.
Yeah.
They both had their careers cut short by COVID. Both of us won the Pac-12 that year. We were both looking forward to long runs in the tournament, and the girls that year were really good, you know. So, but those two got their careers cut short by COVID.
Coach, we appreciate it. Thank you for being part of Coaches versus Cancer, and have a good time when you're here.
Well, it's a great cause, and look forward to getting to Vegas.
Thanks, Dave.
There is. Dana Altman, cancer.org, Coaches versus Cancer. Look into it if you want to play in the tournament. You got to do it pretty quickly. Again, lasvegas.acsgolf.org.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Good spot there with Dan Altman, Oregon head coach. By the way, Oregon will be here in that NIL tournament as they expand it to a bigger field. So that'll be interesting. UNLV's in it too, which I think Kevin Kruger was pretty instrumental in getting him into that NIL tournament, which I think they have a minimum $1 million payout, and then the higher you finish, there could be some more money in it. But UNLV with a brand new squad under Josh Pastner will be in a pretty loaded field, which will include Oregon. Giveaway time. We got a big launch of the Hank, our country radio station. That's going down on Sunday, May 25th at the Palms Pool. Big country shindig. Dina Carter is the prime performer. We've got a four-pack right now. It's presented by Las Vegas Honda Dealers. 364-1100, 364-1100. You want to party in the existence of the Hank. It's at the Palms Pool. It's two Sundays from now. Caller 7-364-1100 for the tickets to go see Dina Carter.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, rolling on here on this Thursday. Couple days away from the beginning of the WNBA season. Do I have that right? They start on Saturday or Friday?
WNBA starts tomorrow.
Okay, Friday. Okay. Fired up?
I am fired up. I've already done some write-ups. Got some more in the hopper. Going to be doing some writing tonight.
Where can people find your stories?
WGRamirez.com for now. And I'm sure I'll be asked to write here and there, farming out some stuff. Once the Aces start their home portion of their schedule, then the visiting teams that come in, I'll do some feature writing on their players and some of their hometown papers and whatnot. But right now, I got something really big coming out tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm just going to leave it at that with some breaking news about the Aces.
Nice. Three games tomorrow. I'm guessing Minnesota-Dallas is the best game. Atlanta-Washington, Sparks, and Golden State. The only reason – I mean, I want to see the Sparks and what they look like. I already know what they look like because they're all, as I said yesterday, you would get this more than maybe the guys on the show yesterday. Actually, Arash was on, and I was talking to Arash about the social media that the Sparks are doing. So one lady's name, Ray Burrell.
Yeah, from Vegas.
Her dancing with, I think it was Rakia Jackson. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what is going on here?
Ray Burrell, Liberty graduate.
You know what? That's my bad.
She went to Foothill. Then she transferred to Liberty in the summer of her senior year,
yeah.
and she led Liberty to the state championship game against Centennial. They had them on the brink of snapping a state championship win streak, and one of the Thomas sisters, I can never remember which one, I think it was Jade, hit a corner buzzer beater to send it to overtime, and then Centennial went on and won. But Ray went on to play at Tennessee, and now she's with the Sparks. And I got a feature coming out on her.
Nice. WGRamirez.com. All right, let's bring in Xavier Pope, out of Chicago, attorney, cultural contributor to Cofield and Company. What's up, EP?
What's up, Steve?
A whole lot. Willie's here. We were talking about the schedule breakdown, all the release videos yesterday. And, you know, one of the things that I will get a little worked up about with the schedule, I don't go crazy, but I do think standalone and primetime spots should be reserved for special franchises and teams. And I know it's hard to make preseason prognostications. What'd you think of the Cowboys getting upwards of a half a dozen primetime appearances?
Come on, Steve. I mean, I put this on my threads. The Cowboys haven't been a consistently good team in 30 years. It's amazing the most valued franchise in professional sports. And their heyday in the 70s, and it's incredible how the NFL is able to keep value in some of the franchises that have been around for a long time, and how loyal the fan base is going to be. No matter how long the team has been, no matter how long the team has been mediocre, no matter how many disappointing seasons Dak Prescott has had, how many bad decisions Jerry Jones has made, I think that this is supposed to be a league of parity, right, Steve? So in that vein, aren't you supposed to be putting on teams that consistently show they're able to win year in, year out? Not a team that's mediocre every year, Steve?
I mean, they play the hits, because that's why it is completely absurd that the Patriots and the Giants are on any primetime games. Both are going to suck this year. But then they're not consistent, right? It's like, oh, well, it's New England, New York, and you got Dallas, a big-name team. Well, the Bears are back, and, like, the Bears have three. It's a monster city with a monster fan base. It controls a lot of the Midwest. Put them on more than three times. I want to see the Bears.
Well, you know, that's where that East Coast bias thing comes in, right, Steve?
Yep.
It doesn't really matter if there's a huge Midwest market. It doesn't matter. But then you have to look at the anomaly of the Packers. And so how often they get televised national game. NFL put this weird value in what represents football and what represents Coast. And they kind of have this unique formula of the Giants, the Patriots, the Dallas Cowboys, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Packers. And that's kind of how this like weird little stew that the NFL bakes up to sell to fans.
Don't they know Chicago is all about the Popes? You and Leo. How much has the city celebrated that the first American Pope is a Chicago guy, went to Villanova, so Notre Dame, shame on you, bad recruiting job. But how has the city reacted?
Yeah, the city's been going up. You know, all the different, the two cool memes relating it to different music. There's the one with putting a hot dog in his hand as he's walking out, Chief Keith Finetto.
Sure.
I mean, the city's been going up for it, and also the fact that he does represent some of the values of the city itself in terms of the politics of the city, being progressive, Pope, and some of the things he's spoken out against the current administration. So I think that it aligns with what the city feels that it's culturally is at, and it's a good time to have a Pope from Chicago. And now I'm the second most popular Pope in Chicago. Sorry.
Yes, well, when Steve said, doesn't people know that Chicago is about the Popes? And let's not forget that this is still, you know, who the face of Chicago is Angel Reese.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Xavier Pope. I'm sorry.
No, she surpassed you, bro.
That's not a Pope. But yes, absolutely, the city does love Angel Reese. The city does love its icons and the sports, and it's taken very well to Angel Reese. That's absolutely correct. But I would love to meet the Pope so that we can have an accordance of Popes, and then we can be two Popes.
There you go.
Two Popes in a pod.
Xavier Pope is with Cofield and Company. Okay. Willie inserts Angel Reese into the conversation. I will counter with Haley Van Lith. I wonder if there's a certain part of the Chicagoland community that will gravitate to a little white on the Chicago team, because I think you and I need to have a conversation about a big white in Dallas, because Stephen A. was really interested in the story. Can we play the Stephen A. bite?
When you've got somebody with that kind of potential and they're white and you are in America, you keep that dude. You keep him. I'm telling you right now, with my black self, I'm the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, I ain't thinking about drafting somebody else.
Stephen A. Smith, agree or disagree, Xavier?
Stephen A. Smith is incorrect. I think that's not what like Herm Edwards once said, can he play? Cooper Flagg can flat out ball. I mean, he's athletic. He can shoot. He could do so many different things with the basketball. I'm impressed by him as a talent. And I hate that Stephen A. Smith, who reduces Cooper Flagg to this racial discussion. Unfortunately, that's just what it is, because there hasn't been a top white American star. We've had many from the international game. And over a generation. And so that's been a position that Cooper Flagg is in. I think that puts unnecessary pressure on Cooper Flagg, though. Who knows? Stephen A. Smith never mentioned what Cooper Flagg thinks about a decision like that and it relates to him. And now Cooper Flagg is going to have to be able to be in a situation where, what is Cooper Flagg's politics? Who does he support? And I think that's unfortunate. Yep. That has to be placed on him, regardless of what his race is.
And you know what? You can trace this conversation back to the late 80s, early 90s, when there was a group straight out of Brooklyn, third base, and everybody started saying the best white rappers, the best white rappers, and even harder than the Beastie Boys, and they loved them. And MC Search used to say, stop calling us white rappers. You don't call them black rappers. You're putting it puts pressure on us. We're all rappers in the music industry. There's nothing different than when what you just said. You nailed it, Xavier, because all of a sudden you're turning a conversation in the athletes. You know what? Steve brought up Haley Van Lith, and I get it, but when Courtney Vandersloot re-signed with the Chicago Sky after coming back from the New York Liberty, they love her because of who she is and what she brought to that city with her wife Allie Quigley. It's Sloot. That's it. It's Courtney Vandersloot. She's a baller. Haley Van Lith is a baller. You nailed it 100%. It was the first thing I thought of with the way you were explaining it is third base used to say it all the time. We're not white rappers. We're rappers.
I mean, I think it's also important, Willie, that people's identity is part of what shows up in the world in our modern-day politics. We get that. And also, Cooper Flagg shouldn't be judged by the color of his skin in terms of how he's able to play basketball. I think that's the first thing. But the second thing is, he has to go into an all-black league, and then he has to deal with maybe some conversations around, hey, will they bump it around? Will they treat him a certain way? And then you have the right-wing media and right-wing sports media talking about any time this guy gets a hard foul.
Yep.
We're going to be talking about the suggerization of whatever guy gave him Cooper Flagg a hard foul.
Yep.
When it's just welcome to the NBA.
Yep, just like Caitlin Clark last year.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
Xavier Pope is with us. I wish we were all researched when we vote, but that's not the case. And I bring up the case here of an Ohio lawmaker. There's actually multiple lawmakers in Ohio who introduced a bill to ban noon kickoffs for Ohio State football. What are we doing with public servants and really serving the public in terms of things that are super important?
Yeah, it's really interesting that the sports crowd won't stick to politics. It's this want to invade every part of life as part of your political ethos. People won't stay in their lane. Why do you care what time this game starts? Why you want to even be a part of that in the first place? We just talked about this last week, Steve, in terms of the administration attempting to maybe create some kind of commission to be able to control athletes' freedom of contract. And this seems to be a part of the bigger narrative. of politicians and trying to invoke themselves in college sports and put it in a way to frame it and shape it in their own fandom, it looks like.
Yeah. By the way, you did see that Nick Saban told Paul Feinbaum yesterday he knows nothing about this Trump College Sports Commission and doesn't even think it's necessary. I'm like, I thought that was the big hook. Is Saban's involved? And he's like, I don't care. I know nothing about it. I don't think we need it.
I mean, I said last week, though, Steve, I said, I don't trust it.
You did. You said
it. And so until I see something come out of this that shows what's actually going on, I really don't trust any part of whether a so-called commission, or just talk to be able to see where maybe some kind of informal lobbying to be able to make changes in any laws that are currently in place.
Okay, now I'm going to pull something that I love to do every once in a while. You guys ever see the video that got mashed up of Skip Bayless on both sides of an argument head-to-head because he would just change his take based on whatever the embrace debate was? I am actually going to touche myself on ripping politicians in Ohio for worrying about noon kickoff. Now, if this guy actually said, and I couldn't find this, if this lawmaker said, noon kickoffs suck for us because we make so much more as a community over the course of a day leading into a 7 o'clock game, I'm doing what's right for the businesses, the hotels, the tourism of Columbus. If that was verbalized, then I would accept that. And I do think, like, I bring it up all the time. In the state of Nevada, we are, for some reason, on the outside in on all these college football riches with the University of Nevada, Reno, and UNLV. And there should be a couple of politicians who are like, damn it! Why are we on the outside? This is not right. Why are we not getting the money because of this artificial system that is put together? I don't mind politicians getting involved, but if it's just performative and you don't have an argument, then screw off.
Yeah, I think that's actually a correct point, Steve. If you have some legitimate ideas, but you have to also express those ideas in terms of tangible plans and have data. I think that where we are right now, we have such a grifting society, particularly our politicians. They're just presenting their random thoughts about these issues and their opinions, and that's how they decided to be able to try to make things into law. And that's what I have a problem with, Steve.
Of course. I got 15 seconds. I saw your point about the Four Seasons Netflix show and the Four Seasons movie. I did go back and watch the movie. There is a big difference between the two.
Very, very big difference. I liked the series better. It was much more watchable, and it was not as dark as the series was in terms of the movie. Like the actors, like the characters much better. Even they have a lot of stars in that movie.
They were very unhappy, the three couples. They're very unhappy. Very jealous. Very nasty to each other. I don't think they were really friends, Xavier. We're friends. Love you, buddy. We'll see you.
Love you too, man.
That was tight.